Chapter 45. Renovated certainly the saloon of the Ferndale was to receive the strange woman. The mellowness of its old-fashioned, tarnished decoration was gone. And Anthony, looking round, saw the glitter, the gleams, the color of new things, untried, unused, very bright, too bright. The workmen had gone only last night, and the last piece of work they did was the hanging of the heavy curtains which looped midway the length of the saloon, divided it in two if released, cutting off the after end with its companion way leading direct on the poop, from the forepart with its outlet on the deck, making a privacy within a privacy, as though Captain Anthony could not place obstacles enough between his new happiness and the men who shared his life at sea. He inspected that arrangement with an approving eye, then made a particular visitation of the whole, ending by opening a door which led into a large stateroom made of two knocked into one. It was very well furnished and had, instead of the usual bedplace of such cabins, an elaborate swinging cot of the latest pattern. Anthony tilted it a little by way of trial. "The old man will be very comfortable in here," he said to himself, and stepped back into the saloon, closing the door gently. Then another thought occurred to him, obvious under the circumstances, but strangely enough presenting itself for the first time. "Oh, won't he get a shock," thought Roderick Anthony. He went hastily on deck. "Mr. Franklin, Mr. Franklin." The mate was not very far. "H. Here you are. Miss. Mrs. Anthony'll be coming on board presently. Just give me a call when you see the cab." Then, without noticing the gloominess of the mate's countenance, he went in again. Not a friendly word, not a professional remark, or a small joke, not as much as a simple, "and in an fine day." Nothing. Just turned about and went in. We know that, when the moment came, he thought better of it, and decided to meet Flora's father in that privacy of the main cabin which he had been so careful to arrange. Why Anthony appeared to shrink from the contact, he who was sufficiently self-confident not only to face, but to absolutely create a situation almost insane in its audacious generosity, is difficult to explain. Perhaps when he came on the poop for a glance, he found that man so different outwardly from what he expected, that he decided to meet him for the first time out of everybody's sight. Possibly the general secrecy of his relation to the girl might have influenced him. Truly he may well have been dismayed. That man's coming brought him face to face with the necessity to speak and act a lie, to appear what he was not, and what he could never be, unless, in short, we'll say if you like that for various reasons, all having to do with the delicate rectitude of his nature, Roderick Anthony, a man of whom his chief mate used to say, "He doesn't know what fear is," was frightened. There is a nemesis which overtakes generosity too, like all the other imprudences of men who dare to be lawless and proud. "Why do you say this?" I inquired, for Marlowe had stopped abruptly, and kept silent in the shadow of the bookcase. "I say this, because that man whom chance had thrown in Flora's way was both lawless and proud. Whether he knew anything about it, or not, it does not matter. Very likely not. One may fling a glove in the face of nature, and in the face of one's own moral endurance quite innocently, with a simplicity which wears the aspect of perfectly satanic conceit. However, as I have said, it does not matter. It's a transgression all the same, and has got to be paid for in the usual way. But never mind that." I paused because, like Anthony, I find a difficulty, a sort of dread in coming to grips with old DeBarrel. You remember I had a glimpse of him once. He was not an imposing personality. Tall, thin, straight, stiff, faded, moving with short steps, and with a gliding motion, speaking in an even low voice. When the sea was rough, he wasn't much seen on deck, at least not walking. He caught hold of things then, and dragged himself along as far as the after skylight, where he would sit for hours. R. Then young friend offered once to assist him, and this service was the first beginning of a sort of friendship. He clung hard to one, Powell says, with no figurative intention. Powell was always on the lookout to assist, and to assist mainly Mrs. Anthony, because he clung so jolly hard to her that Powell was afraid of her being dragged down notwithstanding, that she very soon became very sure-footed in all sorts of weather. And Powell was the only one ready to assist at hand, because Anthony, by that time, seemed to be afraid to come near them. The unforgiving Franklin always looked wrathfully the other way. The boatswain, if up there, acted likewise but sheepishly. And any hands that happened to be on the poop, a feeling spreads mysteriously all over a ship, shunned him as though he had been the devil. We know how he arrived on board. For my part, I know so little of prisons that I haven't the faintest notion how one leaves them. It seems as abominable an operation as the other, the shutting up with its mental suggestions of bang, snap, crash and the empty silence outside, where an instant before you were, and now no longer are. Perfectly devilish. And the release. I don't know which is worse. How do they do it? Pull the string, door flies open, man flies through. Out you go. Adios. And in the space where a second before you were not, in the silent space there is a figure going away, limping. Why limping? I don't know. That's how I see it. One has a notion of a maiming, crippling process, of the individual coming back damaged in some subtle way. I admit it is a fantastic hallucination, but I can't help it. Of course I know that the proceedings of the best machine-made humanity are employed with judicious care and so on. I am absurd, no doubt, but still. Oh yes, it's idiotic. When I pass one of these places. Did you notice that there is something infernal about the aspect of every individual stone or brick of them, something malicious as if matter were enjoying its revenge of the contemptuous spirit of man? Did you notice? You didn't? Eh? Well, I am perhaps a little mad on that point. When I pass one of these places I must avert my eyes. I couldn't have gone to meet the barrel. I should have shrunk from the ordeal. You will notice that it looks as if Anthony, a brave man indubitably, had shirked it too. Little Fine's flight of fancy picturing three people in the fatal four-wheeler, you remember? Went wide of the truth. There were only two people in the four-wheeler. Flora did not shrink. Women can stand anything. The dear creatures have no imagination when it comes to solid facts of life. In sentimental regions I won't say. It's another thing altogether. There they shrink from a rush to embrace ghosts of their own creation just the same as any fool man would. No. I suppose the girl Flora went on that errand reasonably. And then, why? This was the moment for which she had lived. It was her only point of contact with existence. Oh yes. She had been assisted by the Fines. And kindly. Certainly. Kindly. But that's not enough. There is a kind way of assisting our fellow creatures which is enough to break their hearts, while it saves their outer envelope. How cold, how infernally cold she must have felt, unless when she was made to burn with indignation or shame. Man, we know, cannot live by bread alone, but hang me, if I don't believe that some women could live by love alone. If there be a flame in human beings fed by varied ingredients earthly and spiritual which tinge it in different hues, then I seem to see the color of theirs. It is azure. What the devil are you laughing at? Marlowe jumped up and strode out of the shadow, as if lifted by indignation, but there was the flicker of a smile on his lips. Who say I don't know women? Maybe. It's just as well not to come too close to the shrine. But I have a clear notion of women. In all of them, termagant, flirt, crank, washerwoman, blue stocking, outcast, and even in the ordinary fool of the ordinary commerce there is something left, if only a spark. And when there is a spark there can always be a flame. He went back into the shadow and sat down again. I don't mean to say that Flora de Barrel was one of the sort that could live by love alone. In fact, she had managed to live without. But still, in the distrust of herself, and of others, she looked for love, any kind of love, as women will. And that confounded jail was the only spot where she could see it, for as he had no reason to distrust her father. She was there in good time. I see her gazing across the road at these walls which are, properly speaking, awful. You do indeed seem to feel along the very lines and angles of the unholy bulk, the fall of time, drop by drop, hour by hour, leaf by leaf, with a gentle and implacable slowness. And a voiceless melancholy comes over one, invading, overpowering like a dream, penetrating and mortal like poison. When the barrel came out, she experienced a sort of shock to see that he was exactly as she remembered him. Perhaps a little smaller. Otherwise unchanged. You come out in the same clothes, you know. I can't tell whether he was looking for her. No doubt he was. Whether he recognized her? Very likely. She crossed the road, and at once there was reproduced at a distance of years, as if by some mocking witchcraft, the sight so familiar on the parade at Brighton of the financier de Barrel walking with his only daughter. One comes out of prison in the same clothes one wore on the day of condemnation, no matter how long one has been put away there. Oh, they last. They last. But there is something which is preserved by prison life even better than one's discarded clothing. It is the force, the vividness of one's sentiments. A monastery will do that too, but in the unholy claustration of a jail you are thrown back wholly upon yourself, for God and faith are not there. The people outside disperse their affections, you hoard yours, you nurse them into intensity. What they let slip, what they forget in the movement and changes of free life, you hold on to, amplify, exaggerate into a rank growth of memories. They can look with a smile at the troubles and pains of the past, but you can't. Old pains keep on gnawing at your heart, old desires, old deceptions, old dreams, assailing you in the dead stillness of your present, where nothing moves except the irrecoverable minutes of your life. The barrel was out, and, for a time speechless, being led away, almost before he had taken possession of the free world, by his daughter. Flora controlled herself well. They walked along quickly for some distance. The cab had been left round the corner, round several corners for all I know. He was flustered, out of breath, when she helped him in and followed herself. Inside that rolling box, turning towards that recovered presence with her heart too full for words, she felt the desire of tears as he had managed to keep down abandon her suddenly, her half-mournful, half-triumphant exultation subside, every fiber of her body, relaxed in tenderness, go stiff in the close look she took at his face. He was different. There was something. Yes, there was something between them, something hard and impalpable, the ghost of these high walls. How old he was, how unlike. She shook off this impression, amazed and frightened by it, of course. And remorseful too. Naturally. She threw her arms round his neck. He returned that hug awkwardly, as if not in perfect control of his arms, with a fumbling and uncertain pressure. She hid her face on his breast. It was as though she were pressing it against a stone. They released each other, and presently the cab was rolling along at a jog trot to the docks with those two people as far apart as they could get from each other, in opposite corners. After a silence given up to mutual examination, he uttered his first coherent sentence outside the walls of the prison. What has done for me was envy. Envy. There was a lot of them just bursting with it every time they looked my way. I was doing too well. So they went to the public prosecutor, she said hastily, yes. Yes. I know, and he glared, as if resentful, that the child had turned into a young woman without waiting for him to come out. How do you know about it? He asked. Who were too young? His speech was soft. The old voice, the old voice. It gave her a thrill. She recognized its pointless gentleness, always the same no matter what he had to say. And she remembered that he never had much to say when he came down to see her. It was she who chattered, shattered. On their walks, while stiff and with a rigidly carried head, he dropped a gentle word now and then. Moved by these recollections waking up within her, she explained to him that within the last year as he had read and studied the report of the trial. I went through the files of several papers, Papa. He looked at her suspiciously. The reports were probably very incomplete. No doubt the reporters had garbled his evidence. They were determined to give him no chance either in court or before the public opinion. It was a conspiracy. Dot, my counsel was a fool too, he added. Did you notice? A perfect fool. She laid her hand on his arm soothingly. Is it worth, while talking about that awful time? It is so far away now. She shuddered slightly at the thought of all the horrible years which had passed over her young head, never guessing that for him the time was but yesterday. He folded his arms on his breast, leaned back in his corner, and bowed his head. But in a little while he made her jump by asking suddenly, who has got hold of the Lone Valley Railway? That's what they were after mainly. Somebody has got it. Parfitts and Company grabbed it, eh? Or was it that fellow Warner? Dot, I don't know, she said quite scared by the twitching of his lips. Don't know, he exclaimed softly. Hadn't her cousin told her? Oh yes. As he had left them, of course. Why did she? It was his first question about herself, but she did not answer it. She did not want to talk of these horrors. They were impossible to describe. She perceived, though, that he had not expected an answer, because she heard him muttering to himself that here was half a million's worth of work done, and material accumulated there. You mustn't think of these things, Papa, she said firmly. And he asked her with that invariable gentleness, in which he seemed now to detect some rather ugly shades, what else had he to think about? Another year or two, if they had only left him alone, he and everybody else would have been all right, rolling in money, and she, his daughter, could have married anybody. A lord. All this was to him like yesterday, a long yesterday, a yesterday gone over innumerable times, analyzed, meditated upon for years. It had a vividness and force for that old man of which his daughter, who had not been shut out of the world, could have no idea. She was to him the only living figure out of that past, and it was perhaps in perfect good faith that he added, coldly, inexpressive and thin-lipped, lived only for you, I may say. I suppose you understand that. There were only you and me. Moved by this declaration, wondering that it did not warm her heart more, she murmured a few endearing words, while the uppermost thought in her mind was that she must tell him now of the situation. She had expected to be questioned anxiously about herself, and while she desired it, she shrank from the answers she would have to make. But her father seemed strangely, unnaturally incurious. It looked as if there would be no questions. Still, this was an opening. This seemed to be the time for her to begin. And she began. She began by saying that as he had always felt like that. There were two of them, to live for each other. And if he only knew what as he had gone through. Ensconced in his corner, with his arms folded, he stared out of the cab window at the street. How little he was changed after all. It was the unmovable expression, the faded stare she used to see on the Esplanade, whenever walking by his side hand in hand she raised her eyes to his face while she chattered. It was the same stiff, silent figure which at a word from her would turn rigidly into a shop, and buy her anything it occurred to her that she would like to have. Florida Barrel's voice faltered. He bent on her that well-remembered glance in which as he had never read anything as Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.